and welcome to The Signal. I'm Natalia Tola.
And I'm Connor McDowell. We're with the audio workshop at the University of King's College School of Journalism.
Today on the show, keeping masks on campus.
I'm torturing the kids. Yeah. Oh my God, I'm torturing them. Okay.
And why the people who take care of other people's children are upset.
The wage compensation package, the wage scale, is a joke!
We'll hear why raises for childcare workers are prompting interest.
Plus later, we'll meet Envy, a band that's creating inclusive spaces for queer people into the punk and queer rock world.
If we can be that band that I wish that I had growing up, exactly. Being queer, that would be really cool.
All that and more on today's show.
Dalhousie and the University of King's College have announced they're sticking with masks for the rest of the school year. But not everyone is in favor.
I don't care anymore!
This man is standing in front of Killam Library drinking a beer and cussing at people who walk by with a mask on. Security finally confronts him.
I want to tell other people to take their mask off.
That's fine, but can you do it somewhere else?
No, I want to do it right here. Is there a problem?
Yes.
Yeah, there is a problem.
What's the problem?
Because you're in somebody's students, like, students are...
All right, I'll leave.
Yes, you have to leave.
Neve Clute was one of the students he yelled at.
He was standing on a rock outside of the library. He was yelling at me, you know, take off your mask. We don't need that anymore.
The confrontation took place the day before Dalhousie and King's announced they're sticking with mask mandates for the winter.
I'm in favor of them being worn myself personally.
William Leahy is the president of King's College. He says masks protect against the flu and COVID and give peace of mind to students who have to be in the classroom. Still, mask mandates are divisive, and students have mixed feelings about the move.
I think it's ridiculous. I think that students are together all the time outside of school hours. There's no need to mask during school hours.
The greater good, right? You know, it benefits everybody when you keep it on, including yourself. It's not just COVID, right? It's like the cold and flu season. You're going to be better off if you're wearing a mask anyway. Look at how low flu rates were in the last 2 years.
I don't think the answer to that is more mask mandates, because those viruses will continue to exist no matter what, and people being exposed to them is how you limit them in the long term.
We have an outbreak of COVID right now, and one person got it, and my entire floor got it. And I think for us to continue learning in person, I don't think it's the worst choice.
Considering there isn't a more broad mandate, it ends up being sort of farcical from a standpoint of actually stopping the spread. So really it's sort of security theater.
Back at the Killam Library, the ranting man says it's clear to him.
They don't do anything. They don't do anything.
And Natalia, the mandates will continue until April, when another decision will be made about whether to extend them through the summer. By the way, I heard this afternoon that the yelling man has been banned from campus.
When it comes to working in childcare, it's a labor of love. But workers in the early childhood education industry need a lot more than that to survive. Last year, the Department of Education received federal funding to provide educators with living wages that they've been waiting for, amongst other benefits. But 15 months on, these workers say that they're still not getting what was promised. Sabine Antigua brings us with the latest on this story.
Who's this for? For
the children! This week, early childhood educators, or ECEs, in Halifax left their classrooms to protest at Halifax's Grand Parade. It was part of a national day of action, continuing the fight for living wages.
The wage compensation package, the wage scale, is a joke!
In 2021, the provincial and federal governments agreed to restructure the childcare industry in Nova Scotia into a publicly funded system similar to healthcare. The intention was to improve the quality and affordability of childcare services, starting with reduced parent fees in January of this year. Bobby Lynn Keating operates the Peter Green Childcare Hall.
So once they froze our parent fees, we weren't allowed to increase them. that ties our hands. So the funding has to come from the government. They have to increase that.
As part of the agreement, Nova Scotia received $40 million from the federal government. That was meant to support childcare centers. But many ECEs say not everyone is seeing the difference.
Out of that $40 million, I'm receiving a dollar increase, and that is offensive to me.
Heather Cameron has worked as an ECE for almost 30 years. She's part of a local group called ECEs Can't Wait. It organized a rally in September after the Department of Education failed to provide an update on a wage increase that had been promised for the fall.
When it was released, there was a lot of people that were really shocked that it was so low. For myself, being in the field for 27 years, the raise I would get would be almost insignificant.
Longtime ECEs in some centers have had their names red-circled, meaning that the department thinks they already make enough and may have to wait even longer for a wage increase. B. De Guzman says that he's fighting for them.
They helped me through my experience, so I feel for them that they have been red-circled, not even recognize the work that they have done for me as a new ECE.
Across Halifax, ECEs like Morgan Christie are trying to gather support to demand living wages.
As ECEs, we work really hard every day, like most professions, but we're not currently paid a living wage, despite being promised that that was going to happen.
Shelley Amiot is just one of a handful of parents who turned out to show their support.
When I found out more about their wages and the way that the government funds ECEs, I was so disappointed.
The workers made their way to the Department of Education. They wanted to talk to the Minister of Early Childhood Education, Becky Druhan.
Maybe we need to go find her. Maybe she's inside.
Where is she?
But security kept them from entering the building, and the minister didn't come out. In a statement to The Signal, the Department of Education says ECEs are receiving wage increases between 14 and 43%, with more to come in the next year. For The Signal, I'm Sabine Antigua in Halifax.
It can be hard enough to be a successful band. It's even harder when you're trying to create community. Andrew Lamb takes us through a local band that's trying to do just that.
NB is short for non-binary, but it's also a new queercore punk band that's trying to carve out safe spaces for queer people in the Halifax music scene.
If we can be that band that I wish that I had growing up, being queer, that would be really cool.
That's guitarist Chris Power. They say the band doesn't want to fit in with the traditional music scene. Vocalist Clark Berry says the band wants to show queer people of all ages, including youth, that they can be loud and proud of who they are.
It's important that queer folk are outspoken and forward, especially the past couple weeks have been f***ing rough, and it's just proven to me even more that we need a scene where we can f***ing yell about it and be mad about it.
Which is important in the music world because
these macho attitudes and these queerphobic attitudes still do run rampant.
Power says that's why inclusive venues like Ratstorm are so important. NB played there recently. Ratstorm is a dry, all-ages spot where artists can collaborate and hold events.
It's a space that, like, the 16-year-old queer kid can come out to and feel safe, and there's not many spaces like that.
Rizoma Atkinson gives orientations to musicians who want to use Ratstorm's recording studio and performance spaces.
Having folks since young ages coming here and having the opportunity to experience music in most of shows that are also pay what you can, that invites to a lot of people to create and to engage with music.
They say Ratstorm's role as an inclusive place for work and events makes it different.
Ratstorm has all the queerness and all the queer power, queer impulse that I think can make a community of artists flourish.
Fiona Diamond is head of Music Nova Scotia. She says the organization wants to support new and diverse bands like NB with training and mentorship, but
we never have enough money. Everybody is working on a shoestring. We're constantly trying to find money to institute these programs.
Still, for NB bassist Trent Thomas, their past experiences make them thankful for the band and for Ratstorm.
There was nothing like this for me, and being part of it now, it means a lot.
Although NB doesn't know what's coming up next, for now, they'll continue being loud and proud. For The Signal, I'm Andrew Lamb, bobbing my head to the music.
You're listening to The Signal on CKVU 88.1 FM in Halifax. You can also hear us on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Just search The Signal, a Halifax podcast.
We're bringing you stories from the audio workshop at the University of King's College School of Journalism. I'm Connor McDowell.
And I'm Natalia Tola. Still to come on the show, the housing problem that won't go away.
And as Halifax continues to gentrify, we're finding more and more people in this province are struggling.
Shasara Khan talks to two of those people.
And a little something for your funny bone.
That's our market. Brunch Moms is our market.
Yeah, our Wednesday night show.
Wednesday night show, Brunch Moms.
We'll meet a Halifax comedy duo doing things a little differently.
And later, we'll find out what's going on around Halifax this weekend.
And then we have added recently, because of the time of year, new work, often smaller pieces, by a number of other artists, both painters and ceramic artists.
From art to music to shopping, we've got you as you plan for your weekend.
The Affordable Housing Association of Nova Scotia recently released some statistics. As of November 22nd, 694 people in Halifax were homeless. Shazara Khan talked to two of them and has this report.
I live in a tent. I can't afford anywhere clean.
This man is standing outside Shoppers Drug Mart on Spring Garden Road. He's holding a sign saying, "Anything helps." Some people have already put coins in his cup. He says his name is Joker, and he's fallen on tough times.
I'm on disability now. I used to work. I'm heavily medicated, so I can't hold a steady job and have to resort to begging. I get a subsidy, but there's nowhere downtown to live unless you have big money, and I don't have that kind of money.
Joker says there just isn't enough support. Sheldon McEwen agrees. He gets social assistance from the province.
I think it's like $575 they give us a month for rent. And a lot of places, as you know, are like $600+.
So he's living in a trailer that, out of the cold, operates for people without homes. Campbell McClintock is a street outreach worker for Out of the Cold. He says McEwen is one of 62 people the organization is housing around Halifax and Dartmouth.
I think the general public has a certain idea of what a typical homeless person looks like, and they might be imagining somebody visible mental illness and tattered clothing and rags living in a cardboard box.
In fact, he says they can look like anyone.
And as Halifax continues to gentrify, we're finding more and more people in this province are struggling.
McClintock says things like health, ethnicity, and gender make housing difficult for people, but money is still the biggest barrier. Pamela Lovelace is a city councillor for Halifax. She says the province is responsible for housing. And a quarter of all municipal property tax revenue goes to the province for public housing. But there haven't been any new public housing projects in Halifax for more than 30 years.
Homelessness is not a Halifax issue, right? Homelessness is a human rights issue. And what we're struggling with, I think, is having a provincial government that recognizes that homelessness and poverty and substance use and mental health all go hand in hand.
McClintock and Lovelace both agree that the city and province need to work together. Meanwhile, the Affordable Housing Association of Nova Scotia is turning a former Dartmouth motel into supportive housing. The money is coming from the municipal, provincial, and federal governments. It will house over 60 people, with the first expected to move in the new year. For The Signal, I'm Shazara Khan.
And yesterday, the province said it'll create a new 20-bed emergency shelter in Lower Sackville at a cost of $378,000. The shelter will open early this month.
Connor, don't you ever find yourself needing a good laugh on the cold, windy days we've been having?
Oh, absolutely.
This week, I caught a local comedy group called The Understudies at El's Bistro on Barrington Street. They paired up with other comedians to read out loud old diary entries and then act them out for the audience.
Hello, children. Welcome to the juggling time.
This is the babysitter. This is not the real jerk.
And Connor, earlier this week, I met with the understudies. They told me how the comedy scene has changed in Halifax post-pandemic and how this influences their comedy style. They started by introducing themselves.
My name's Sarah Graham. I am a comedian with Eric. I'm also the executive director of the Halifax Fringe Festival, so very involved in the arts and comedy scene in Halifax.
And my name is Eric Garf, and I am friends of Sarah. My accolades don't heighten. Yeah, Sarah and I have been doing improv together before COVID times. And we were doing it for a couple years together. And now, after COVID, a lot of things change. And we've kind of formed into our own little group to sort of pioneer this next phase, or like the next wave of the comedy scene.
Yeah, I was originally a very annoying fan of Eric's. I would show up to his shows and he'd write sketches. I'm like, I've got a pitch for you. And he was like, don't do this.
I write my own material.
And I thought Eric was like going to be the next big thing in Halifax comedy because I thought he was so funny.
Sarah's never said that before. It's the first time I've heard that.
It's the only nice thing I've said.
That's the only nice thing.
I think we really thrive because we're actually friends in life, and we think each other's humor is quite funny, and so that makes a big difference on how we prepare. It's like, are we always making each other laugh, or are we always finding the bits that we're doing when we're just hanging out funny?
Yeah.
Great.
It's very clean, I would say. We, you know, kind of focus on content that we feel comfortable putting on stage. That's something we always say to each other before we go on, like, let's only do things that are in our comfort zones, really. And things we think we can bring to the stage. And I think a lot of the time we don't feel comfortable bringing things that are inappropriate, I guess, or we don't swear too often.
Yeah, it's, I would say that we really are just looking for joy, and we're looking for the funny moments in life outside of like the sex, drugs, and rock and roll mentality that the comedy scene sometimes has, what's funny about regular life.
Yeah, that's interesting because we have noticed some changes. I think ticket sales are actually going a lot better after these past 5 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's a big change scene in the general scene of people are really looking for, like Eric said, they're really looking for a laugh. And again, like where comedy is this kind of act of service, people are willing to provide it in a way that feels really comfortable and safe. Mm. And so I think that that's been a really important change, is that people aren't, I guess we aren't going for shock value comedy. We're really going for what feels comfortable and what feels comfortable for everybody.
We like to take care of the audience. We really appreciate them coming, because if they weren't there, we wouldn't have a show. So we do like to take care of them and keep them engaged and keep them happy, whether it's just by keeping them warmed up, giving them lots of breaks. We like to give intermissions so people can socialize. And we always like to just keep that joy and cheer kind of flowing through the audience.
Yeah, we think a lot about audience care and acting in comedy as an act of service. Mm-hmm. Like the service industry, people are paying for this service. Mm-hmm. So we'd like to make sure that what they get out of it is more than what they expected. Mm-hmm. So being able to tell them the show's going to start at this time, it's going to end at this time, we'll have an intermission, you're welcome to get up at any point, and really making it feel like you're at your friend's house and they're doing a funny bit for you at their house.
We like to keep it intimate like that.
Yeah.
And we both understand where some people come and do a show and not feeling comfortable. We both have partners who are like, do not want to sit in the front row, yeah. Do not want to be even looked at while we're on stage. They don't want to be engaged with. And we know there's people out there who do not want to be heckled or spoken to. So we kind of respect that too and keep that boundary.
That was Sarah Graham and Eric Garf. And Connor, Their show this week really was a hit. You can actually catch the understudies at the Carlton Hotel this Saturday night.
So, Natalia, what are you doing this weekend?
Well, first of all, I'm going to go to, like, a friend's office party, and then I'm going to go to a friend's birthday party. So, busy times. Fun.
That does sound fun. I think I'll be checking out the Starry Night Gallery Hop. There are 9 local galleries involved. Deborah Carver is the owner of Studio 21 Fine Art and one of the organizers.
Studio 21 is staying open until 10 p.m., and we have invited a jeweler, Tori Poynton, whose brand is Tori XO, T-O-R-I, XO, to do a pop-up. So she's going to be here with her work, and she will also be here on Saturday. And in addition to that, we have our current solo exhibition, which is a young artist whose name is Jimmy 1M Sloan, and his work will be in the gallery. It's abstract, colorful, a lot of sort of interesting topography with respect to the surfaces of the canvases. And then we have added recently, because of the time of year, new work, often smaller pieces by a number of other artists, both painters and ceramic artists and others.
That was Deborah Carver. She's the owner of Studio 21 Fine Art and one of the organizers of the Starry Night Gallery Hop.
That's our show for today.
If there's anything you want to hear again, we post links to our stories on Twitter. Our handle is SignalHFX.
Thank you to our social media producer, Shasara Khan.
A shout out to our technician, Mark Pinio, in the control room.
Our audio professor is Pauline Dakin. I'm Natalia Tola.
And I'm Connor McDowell. We'll be back next week with our last show of the term. I hope you can join us for that. Have a great weekend.